Welcome to Career Tools. Managing a Contractor Career, Chapter 1. Here we go.
If you're struggling with a relationship with your team or your boss or your peers, or maybe you're not struggling, but you just want to get better in terms of relationships and you understand DISC, we highly recommend you consider our Effective Relationships series of podcasts. You can buy a series telling you that if you're a D, how to relate to your directs, each of whom D, I, S, and C, or if you're a D, relating to your boss, who might be a D, I, S, and C. It will tell you in every podcast, some of them as much as 2 hours long, how to handle meetings, how to handle delegations, how to handle feedback and coaching, how to brief your boss, how to disagree with your boss, how to communicate in general with your boss, what your boss wants from you, and what you might want from your directs as well. Many of the show notes are 20 and 25 pages long to give you many, many examples and many, many details of behaviors you can engage in to, again, as we like to say, reduce the drama, reduce the tension, reduce the conflict, and increase the harmony and collaboration, which leads to better outcomes because it's all about results and people are what's important.
I don't recall us talking about life as a contractor before. Is that true or did I miss some?
No, we've never talked about it before, at least not as a whole cast or as a topic unto itself.
Okay. So generally we talk about organizations and direct relationships between managers and his or her employees. And in this case, we're talking about a contract, which is a different kind of relationship and requires you, if you were a contractor and you want to have a successful contracting career, to manage your career a little bit differently. Because, you know, one of the downsides about being a contractor is there is nobody managing your career but you, right?
Yeah, and that's true for most people, although there is some illusion of the company managing your career.
That's true.
Helping
that's
you
true.
With your career. But an actual career rather than a series of contracts as a contractor does need a different kind of thought. And for some reason, for some people, that kind of career really suits them. They like the variety, or they like the change, or they like working with different people, or they just don't like to feel that they're beholden to somebody. The people who are excited by that, who want their career to go that way, then they need to manage their career the same as everybody else.
So what kind of guidance do you have for people who have a career as a contractor?
So we're going to start with take projects strategically. We're going to talk about having the same objective as the company you're working for, building your reputation, and being good. Not good as in obedient, but good as in good at your job.
Performing well. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Although being good is not a bad thing,
no,
either.
Exactly.
Being a good person. Right. Okay, so take projects strategically. So what do you mean by that?
If you want your career to be a contract career, and as I said, not just a series of jobs, then you have to think about that career in a longer term way. The same way as if somebody has just started in the workforce and they know they want to be a VP of marketing. You can't just go then and take different jobs willy-nilly, however they're offered to you. You need to have some kind of strategic thought of, okay, if I want to be VP of marketing, I need to have this experience, and then I need a manager of marketing job, and then I need a director job, and so on. And so you need to think about those things and what it'll take to get you to those stepping stones.
I've never been a contractor. Do not desire to be a contractor, but I've had hundreds of contractors working for me, so I know a little bit about it, and it's amazing to me the number of them who didn't even have a strategic goal. In the sense, if I ask them, well, where, and say they're doing, okay, folks, I'm really old, and so this will make no sense to some of you. We'll say they were a COBOL programmer, right? In the era of when things were shifting from large mainframe applications to, say, Unix-based applications, client-server stuff. And I asked them, like, where do you want to be 5 years from now? And they were like, well, coding. It's like, oh, okay. And some of them are fairly young. Say they're 25 years old. COBOL is on its way out, right? There's mm-hmm. different stuff going on. Like, where do you want to be 10 years from now? And it's like, well, I guess I'd be in client server stuff. And then you start asking, well, what do you need to do between now and then so you're prepared to make that shift? And, you know, you get a blank stare, right? So many of them did not have strategic goals in a sense of where they are now and where they want to be 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road. And secondly, those that had this kind of vague idea where they wanted to be, the lack of a plan on how they were going to get there. And so I think what you're talking about is, one, have a goal. And then secondly, think about the contracts you take over the next several years in the context of how do each of these contracts help me to achieve my long-term strategic goal?
Exactly. Yeah. And that means having enough money to be able to pick and choose contracts. And we're going to talk later. There's going to be another whole cast about the rule of contracting, which is you spend one third of the time working, one third of the time training, and then one third of the time prospecting for your next contract. And so you can't expect to be working every single day. And if you're going to pick and choose in order to have those stepping stones, then you're definitely not going to be working every single day. And that's something else you need to be taking into account, the finances of that.
Okay.
So there's all sorts of reasons why people choose to contract. Some people want the flexibility of having long periods of not working in order to travel or spend time with family or whatever. They work for, say, a year and then have 6 months off, or they work for 6 months and then have 6 months off. Depends on what rate you're getting. And if that's what you want to do, then you need to be paying attention to the kind of contracts you get and make sure that they cover the time period that you want, and obviously provide the kind of remuneration that you need in order to cover the 6 months off. Some people want the additional financial rewards. So contracting is usually paid more highly than employees. So a contractor and an employee who both have the same job, the contractor will be paid more. But that's because they have a whole bunch of responsibilities that for the employee, it's covered by the employer. So things like training and taxes and all of their equipment, usually a bunch of things that are additional costs.
Right. Well, and part of it also is a risk premium where a relationship between an employer and an employee is assumed to be longer term in nature, and you're just not indiscriminately fired when at the end of a project. Although it's surprising in some fields how that's not true, but in generally that's the case. And the relationship between the contractor and the person they're contracting with is generally, job's done, I don't need you, you're gone tomorrow, right? So there's a risk premium that is factored into that contractor's wages.
Some people want that. They're okay with the risk and the covering themselves. And so they want the higher rate so that they get all of the money that job is worth per hour. And then they feel like they manage the things that they need in order to keep working, rather than the employer choosing. For instance, training, if you're a contractor and you want to go to some training, it's whether you can afford it or not. Whereas as an employee, you often have to go to the employer's training, or you have to get budget and you have to justify the training. And if it's not something that's in your actual work area, you probably won't be allowed to go. Some people don't like that and would prefer to have the money themselves and make their own choices.
Yeah, no, the interesting thing about it today compared to, say, 20 years ago is the opportunities for training without spending a great deal of money is much greater today than it was 20 years ago, right? So it's possible to become an expert in something and not spend a dime, which was not true 20 years before the birth of the internet. So pretty cool for those of you who are contractors. Pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And some people want the variety of projects. So they like working for different companies. They like having a different role. They like having things with different goals. And so if that's you, then you need to be choosing contracts that give you that variety. If you do three contracts in a row that are all the same thing, you're not getting the benefits that you want out of that being a contractor, and you're adding risk. So it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So that's why it depends on your goal. You need the goal first in order to be able to choose the contracts that fulfill your goal. Otherwise, you're just taking whatever comes.
Whether I agree with it or not doesn't matter, but somebody could have a goal of becoming, say, a JavaScript expert, right? They want to be the premier JavaScript consultant. And so they take JavaScript after JavaScript after JavaScript. That's all their contracts. And they're not concerned at all that JavaScript may not be the technology 10 years from now, right?
Yeah.
Continue to take JavaScript contracts would be within the context of their objective, which is to be an expert. On the other hand, if somebody wanted to have a broader career and be assured of a place in the development space for the next 20 years, they may have a different objective, which is, okay, I need to know JavaScript, but I also need to learn X, Y, and Z. And I could rattle off a bunch of technologies I won't. Depending upon my strategy, I'd pick different contracts.
Yeah. So one thing it can be difficult to get if you are contracting is growth in terms of increasing responsibility or a broadening skill set. But because when people buy contractors or they engage contractors, they want the assurance that the contractor can do this part of this job. And the idea that they would buy a contractor with the hope that that person could cover some other things or for a job that they don't quite fit, but they say they want to move into, is more unlikely. So if you're looking for that kind of growth, then you're going to have to search really hard for contracts that will allow you that kind of leeway to just gradually grow your role in order to get some more responsibilities and parlay that into a more senior job or a different job next time. So if you're really looking to rise in the career ladder, in inverted commas, contracting probably isn't the best way to go.
You're right that it becomes extremely difficult. And again, why, if you want to do that as a contractor, then you have to be pretty strategic about how you manage your career, because it won't happen naturally, right? You'll have to work really hard at it.
Yeah. So the second thing, once you've decided on your goal and then you are aware of it and you're aware of what contracts you need in order to fill that goal, when you're working, in order to have a good reputation as a contractor, you need to have the same objective as the people that you're working with.
Yeah, it's a good idea, since that, you know, for a lot of employees at the company, a lot of managers, they really think of contractors in a not so great way, right? They're they're mercenaries, right? And if you want to overcome that kind of thing in the back of the manager's head, then there's some things you need to do.
Exactly. So your goal might be, as we said earlier, to earn enough in this 12-month contract to be able to have 6 months off. And so when you go to work in the morning and you're tired and the coffee's not working, you're thinking, okay, it's all right because I'm going to be on a beach in Hawaii in 4 months' time. But if that's what the manager knows, then you're playing into the stereotype, the negative stereotype of contractors, that they're only out for their own gain. And so you need to work against that stereotype so that you can prove your worth. Because one of the things that contractors really need is a reputation, and a reputation for being value for money and for being actually useful rather than just the right tool to fix this project.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, nobody wants to be known as a tool, so...
No, in every sense of the word.
Right?
Yeah. So you want to approach your contracts as an opportunity to share your knowledge for the benefit of the project and be demonstrating that to the manager. So some contractors go through their day thinking, I'm being paid for this little box and that's all I'm going to do, which is fine. But if you really want a career, that's probably not terribly helpful to you.
I think contractors may sometimes forget, not all of them by short, not even maybe a majority, but some contractors really don't think about how a manager views a team, because, you know, there's two really important things in terms of managers think about retaining people, which is, can they do their job, right? Are they smart? Do they have the knowledge and the skills, et cetera, to do the job they've been hired for? The other piece of it is how well do they work as a team? Because no, very few individuals can do work as an individual and not work as a team. And probably for some contractors, probably the idea of contracting is, it exacerbates the problem a little bit, because you think of yourself as a technology X or a marketing expert, whatever, and not into other things that the company may do. But managers are evaluating you not only based on your those very specific skills they're hiring you for, but also how do you work as a team. And sometimes working together as a team means you have to dig into things that you might not normally associate with your primary skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, you have all these advantages, like if you've worked on a bunch of similar projects in different industries or for different companies, often contractors work in the same industry and for a bunch of competitors, one after another. And so competitive knowledge is always useful. You can share that and be able to back up some proposal that somebody's making for a course of action. And if it's your boss's proposal, that's even better.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. Or you can leverage your contacts that you've made in other places to benefit the project. Or you can work to provide value for money by making proposals that save time or cost or increase revenue. So having you on the team is not only about solving a specific problem, but you are providing a wider benefit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I love that you brought up a couple of those things, you know, leveraging your contacts elsewhere in the industry, as well as using the knowledge that you've gained outside of the company you're currently working for. I love those because those leverage something that's fairly distinct for most contractors, right, from employees, is they've generally been in more companies they had have had a variety of experience in. So why not bring that value and that experience to the table? So those are great points.
And as you talked about teamwork, other team members can be resentful that as a contractor, you're getting 1.5 or twice as much pay as they are. And as we said, there's a bunch of economic reasons why that is, but that doesn't stop people being human beings and being resentful. And so you need to work harder to be part of the team. So helping individuals with their goals. Perhaps you find out that somebody, you are the JavaScript expert and somebody is, you know, a beginner, or they're having trouble understanding a certain concept or being able to create a program that does something, and being able to help them out gives you a reputation as a team player.
Yeah. And it makes a lot more sense in my experience to spend your time and effort doing that versus trying to convince somebody who's making less than you are. As to the reasons why that is and why it makes sense and the risk you take and blah, blah, blah. That generally falls on deaf ears because folks have a hard time putting and understanding the value of employee benefits that, of course, you're going to talk about, that you have to pay your own health insurance, blah, blah, blah. So don't spend your time there. It doesn't work. Become a member of the team and provide value to your team members, and you'll overcome the whole issue about pay discrepancies.
Mm-hmm. A couple of other ideas. You can allow people to use your network. You can make introductions that they might not be able to get otherwise. When you're working on something with them that's a proposal or a report or something like that, you can allow them to have the credit, because you can still claim it on your resume. You can still, when you're out with prospecting for jobs for the next contract, you can still say, you know, I did this project and there was somebody from the employer's team who was helping me, because there always is. And yeah, if you allow the person who actually works there to get the credit, that really helps them out in terms of their career. And it almost makes no difference to you.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I just think about all the contractors that have worked for me directly or indirectly, and yeah, that's a characteristic they all have in common. Now, one caveat on the whole leveraging your network piece. As a contractor for a company, it would not do you good to assist employees of that company finding jobs elsewhere. That's probably, yes. You probably be a little bit careful about that. I think introducing people to your network is fine in terms of knowledge enrichment and those kind of things. But if you start helping employers, you know, your employer's employees find jobs outside the company, that's not good.
Yeah, that would give you a black mark.
Yeah, your reputation would not be good.
And that's a nice segue into the next part, which
I thought so.
It was very good. You should be on radio. Is build your reputation. And a reputation for a contractor is almost more important than it is when you're a permanent member of staff. anyone should be working on their reputation, because reputation is what opens doors for you. It's what gives you opportunities. But for contractors, because getting contracts is always a competition, so they're in that competition more often, and there's usually only one place that they're competing for, their reputation is more important, because that's what helps them be ahead of the competition.
Right. Well, when you start thinking about how do you get the next contract, the next job, a large piece of that is reputation, right? Which is mm-hmm. reputation generally means that folks are going to be calling you when they think about a JavaScript programmer, which is the example we've been using. If you have a reputation of being great, when some other client has need, your name's going to keep coming up, right? So there's a very direct correlation between reputation and earnings potential.
And it isn't about just being known. It's about being known for something. And that something has to, in some ways, be related to the objective that you have for your career. So if you said you can want to be known as the JavaScript expert, and if that's what you want to do, just JavaScript for your entire career, that's fine. And being known as an expert is probably a good goal. If you want to move on, if you want to be always keeping up with technology, having a reputation for the guy who is on the cutting edge, who always knows the next technology, who's always experimenting, that's another reason that you might want a reputation. Because some companies skip technologies. So they'll have a system that's built on, 2015 technology, and then they won't update it until 2025, and in 2020 we all change something, and so they'll skip. And so being on the cutting edge is always a good place to be. There may be less contracts, but there's probably less competition as well, so you're benefiting that way.
I'm curious what you think about this idea, but there's one of the common themes out there is you have to quote unquote brand yourself, which I hate. Right?
Yeah, me too.
I hate the idea. But if you think about branding and reputation as being one and the same, then it starts to make more sense to me, right? So if I think about branding, it's basically building a reputation for a particular skill or characteristic or ability. And that makes sense because it's based on fact. It's not based on, smoke and mirrors, but rather on what your accomplishment and the facts of who you are and what you can do.
I agree with you. I hate the whole branding thing. But I think branding or reputation management is more important in this area. I think branding...
That's okay. That's my new term for branding. Reputation.
Branding. Okay. Reputation management. We'll keep it with that. Another example, if you really like short, lucrative contracts with loads of time to travel the world in between, you might want to cultivate a reputation for being a kind of troubleshooter, someone who comes in, rights the ship, and leaves the business with a plan to move forward. So it's a very short, specific kind of contract that you want to be looking for, and you have to have the reputation for being good at doing that. You can have done that like 3 or 4 times and not been any good at it, and you won't have a reputation that you can bank on traveling for 6 months with. Other people who want lots of variety might want to cultivate a reputation for being good at some universal principle or method like Six Sigma or Scrum, because those things can be applied to lots of different kinds of projects. Whereas if you're a coder, for example, the projects are likely to be similar just because one technology is the right thing for those kind of projects. You might want to become a specialist in working for small companies because you like to have a lot of influence. The smaller the company, the more influence one person has. If you're a head down, just want to get on with the work kind of person, you might want to be in a bigger company. And so this all comes together. You have your goal, you're choosing the contracts that meet your goal. And then as you choose them, you need to build the reputation for being good at those projects so that you are higher up in the list of people when people think about, oh, I need this. You want to be high in that list because people have heard about how well you've done similar things in the past.
And those are all good points. So you know, kind of general, what you're saying is knowing what your objective is and then taking contracts which support it is an important part of managing your career as a contractor.
Exactly.
So your next port is a good one, like be a good person. No, perform well is related to it, building your reputation, but it has particular importance.
Yes, you can be a good person too. We would recommend that. There is a huge market for contractors, and there are even more contractors who are looking for jobs. And if you look on the forums for contractors, you often see people saying, I've been unemployed for 3 months, I can't find a contract, or, you know, I was on a contract and there were 20 of us and now they're only keeping 15. The management of staying in work and of having those contracts that you want is a lot of what people end up doing when they're contracting. And the people who are good, have a reputation for performing well, are the ones that find it easiest to get more contracts of the type they want, paid the amount they want, and so on. And contractors can be fired more easily than employees. We've talked before about there are some places where it's almost impossible to fire someone, and there's other places where, you know, you can be kicked out on your ear at 5 o'clock tonight. But for contractors, the whole premise of their employment is that you're here when I'm when it's necessary, and when I don't need you anymore, I want you to leave. And so if you're not providing the value for the amount of money that they're paying for you, you'll be asked to leave. It's really simple economics. And a lot of the time it's not working out, that in inverted commas, that's what people say, but really it just means it wasn't a good fit or you weren't performing well. And getting things done is important, but also developing the relationships is really important, because that's what keeps you when the client decides this project is costing too much and we're going to cut 10 people.
Yeah, I think in terms of your reputation, you know, clear to be successful in any company, there's both your performance and then your relationships are two important things. And clearly for contractors, when you're being hired for a specific skill, generally, performance has much more significance for contractors as it does for employees. They're both important, obviously. But obviously, if you're being hired as a JavaScript expert and you can't perform and write JavaScript code, you have a little bit of a problem, regardless of how nice a person you are.
Yeah. And employees can get away with a couple of months slump, you know, because there's something going on at home or there's some other kind of pressure. Contractors can't do that. They have to be good every single day.
Yeah, managers look at employees as long-term investments. So there can be a short-term degradation of performance, and the manager can say, okay, that's, you know, that's okay. I'll deal with it, because in the long term, this person is a valuable employee. Contractor, less so, because the relationship is generally one of a shorter time period.
We have a whole series of these contractor-based podcasts lined up. And later on, we'll talk about how to hit the ground running, both in terms of results and relationships. And so getting things done, or getting the right things done very quickly in order to give value very quickly. But for the meantime, just remember that results and relationships are the two things that careers are built on, and you need to be good at both. So you need to be actually concentrating on your performance in both areas at the same time as doing whatever it is your skill is. To summarize, just at the end here, contracting has all sorts of benefits. We've talked about some of them. There are lots of people who prefer to contract. I contracted for a long time before I actually got a real job. And if you want to make a career of it, you need to be consciously directing what you're doing rather than just taking the next contract offered.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week. Have a great one.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.